Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome in to another edition of the James Sports News Podcast. I am Bennett Conlin. I am joined by Jack Fitzpatrick. Jack, how is life treating you?
Life is treating me well, and it's I'm glad to see you over a computer screen after seeing your face a little bit too much this past weekend. Sorry, that was rude. No, it was a fantastic weekend hanging out with you in Lexington, Virginia. We were able to hit up a women's basketball game. We were able to hit up Three Notch Valley Collab House. We learned an awesome new card board game called Campy Creatures that I destroyed Bennett in with Eva. So a fantastic weekend that was really enjoyable as we celebrated a good friend of ours' weekend of love, as I described it.
Yes, the weekend of love won. The women's basketball team won. The men's basketball team won. And then lost.
They won one.
I guess the women's team also won one. So it's,
yeah, but their win was cooler. Their win was more impressive. Their win was more important.
It's true. And we got to visit Three Notched, which was an absolute thrill.
Which is where I picked up this four-pack. This Raku Juicy IPA, an India Pale Ale, brewed with Raku hops. Absolutely fantastic. And we got to experience all 14 beers they have on draft there at the Valley Collab House.
I personally didn't experience all 14 when I was there, but...
you know what I mean.
I had a good time. And no, it was awesome. I love going there. They've got some great drinks in Harrisonburg there. Worth visiting. And the board game collection is more impressive than I remember.
Yes, it seems like they add to it every time. And if you're there, please play Chutes and Ladders and let us know if it is more difficult than you remember it as a kid.
I think it was hard, man. I was going up the wrong side. A lot of shoots.
Did you win or did Eva win?
I think Eva won. Yeah,
and I never made it past 35.
No, you were struggling. It was a woeful performance from yourself, but a lot of fun.
And you know what else has been a woeful performance of mine? My sports betting at Bet Online. I mean, this isn't me saying don't sports bet. But this is me saying sports bet responsibly because your boy is down a lot of units as of late. Bet Online remains your number one source for all of your sports betting needs this season. Everything from NFL playoffs to pro and college basketball, UFC, MMA, and more. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at Bet Online. Live betting options, free contests, live scores to keep up to date for almost any sport or game imaginable. BetOnline is truly the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite leagues and events. Head to a website. I think where they wrote in head to website, it was supposed to say betonline.ag, and I read website. Head to betonline.ag today or use your mobile device to join and receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Just use promo code BELIEVE, promo code BLEAV to receive your 50% welcome bonus. You make an account, you deposit $100, you'll get a $50 free bet sitting in there waiting for you. BetOnline.ag, where the game starts.
I had a, speaking of betting, had a tough bad beat today.
Oh.
Bet on Florida State men's basketball plus 3.5 against Miami. They're down about 30.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's one, man. That's a couple bounces, 10 threes go in, and that game's all knotted up.
Before we jumped on this to record, I was watching the Notre Dame NC State game.
Oh, is that bad?
At one no, but it's actually a really good game. But NC State went on like a 17-2 run at one point.
Yeah.
And opened up like a 15-point, something crazy. And then Notre Dame climbed all the way back, and I think it's nearly tied at halftime.
Really? That's good stuff.
Yeah.
We love college.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
We start men's team, we start women's team.
I think we start this week with women's because we were at the game. We can kind of break it down. We watched Peyton McDaniel take her dislocated finger, put it back into place. Let's start there. And then I think the very next possession drills a three. But Peyton McDaniel named Sun Belt Player of the Week, third JMU Duke to be named that this season, along with Jefferson and Kozlova. But McDaniel, I don't think – we're talking, I mean, blow for blow, a heavyweight bout. Number three on Troy. I have to look up what her name was. But her and McDaniel and even Kiki in the fourth quarter going blow for blow with each other, that was one of the most fun basketball games I've ever been at.
So much fun. Like, the two best teams, in my opinion, in the Sun Belt, like you mentioned, going blow for blow. Kiki Jefferson felt like she was having a really quiet performance. Then you look up and she finishes with 21. But McDaniel is unbelievable from three. Kobe King away had some really nice moves. Offensively?
Wait. Sorry. Who?
Kobe. Hawaii. She's very good. But McDaniel is like a superstar offensively. So it was really fun to watch her in person play. The whole offense was awesome. I thought the atmosphere, there was, I guess they reported over 3,000 fans attended. Atmosphere was awesome. I thought that the student attendance was really minimal, but like the maybe surprised at how like amped were like the 50-year-old men in attendance. Like there were people that were really getting into it. That,
yeah.
Like when the game tipped off, I did not think would be really into it, which was
specifically
awesome.
My geography gen ed teacher, professor who was a few seats down away from us. Micaiah Hallman.
I think she put on a show, man.
Believe she went off for 33 and hit two threes in the final 4 seconds.
Yeah, JMU probably should have won by like 8 at the end. And there were some other points where they could have pulled away. But like, Troy's got a good team for sure.
A team that thrives in the mid-range. They said, see your analytics and I shove it because we're just going to play in the mid-range.
That was, oh gosh, what a fun game. But McDaniel was just nailing threes, like just stupid shooting ability. And yeah, late, I guess it was the fourth quarter, I think it was the fourth quarter.
It was the fourth.
Late in the game, they kind of stop and she's going over the bench and she's making like this face that looked like, honestly, like I thought she was about to cry. She was clearly in a ton of pain going to the bench. And then she just like stopped making that face, looked over and was like, oh, it was dislocated, saying that to the bench, shakes her hand. And they're like, do you want to come out? And she like waves him off and then nails a three like 30 seconds later. I mean, it was insane to have that level of toughness and then also be like, oh, I'm going to like try to score. And not like play off the ball for like 5 possessions.
Yeah. And then kind of like during that time too, Kiki then scores 7 straight points, tries to assist on like a 9th, but it doesn't end up working out. But just like absurd level of play from everyone in that game. I'm trying to pull up the box score so we can break down exactly what happened in it. But I mean, it wasn't Kozlova's best game, and they still managed to beat the second best team in the Sun Belt. Granted, they did have an otherworldly performance from McDaniel. They had a really, really good performance from Kiki Jefferson. But it's got to feel really good that you were able to take down Troy with what's been your second best scoring option over the last month and a half. Wasn't your second best scoring option in this game?
Yeah, it's just they've got some impressive depth that I didn't necessarily appreciate at the beginning of the season. They're really finding their groove. The other thing we always harped on was like, oh, they turn it over too much, and they had 19, which is a lot. 21 assists, 10 for Jermond.
Jermond was dishing them out. I think also it helps that when your team is hitting the shots,
right,
it makes the assist number look a lot better. What, McDaniel, 6 of 11 from 3, 4 of 5 from the free throw line, 9 of 16 overall, and in 28 minutes had 28 points.
Yeah, I was just super impressed with all of them. I mean, they're just so – like McDaniel and Jefferson is an insane 1-2 punch, and then Kozlova's stupid efficient in the post. It was a game where, like, I thought they could have played Hayes Elmore. She played 13 minutes. Thought she probably could have played a little more. I know she had some foul trouble at times, but like, she's a really good option and super athletic and create her shot, and she only played 13 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, they just have so many options. Claire Neff's not doing a lot scoring recently, but she's pretty you feel her presence defensively and crashing the glass most games.
Yeah, and they shot a really, really solid 37.9% from behind the arc, held up by Peyton's 6 of 11, but they shot 45% from the floor, a 58% mark on the floor in the fourth quarter. Which, yeah, if you think,
really good.
I mean, the way the game ended, it's a one-point game. You got to assume if they aren't going 7 of 12 from the floor, if they shoot 50% from the floor and go 6 of 12, they very well may lose that game. So just really, really impressive performances, start to finish, front to back. And compounding with all of that was a loss the game before against Georgia Southern, where it was a weird play call at the end with kind of giving it to Kiki to just drive into the lane to try and make a contested layup with 3 Georgia Southern defenders all over her. And then to bounce back from your first loss in 14 games to go out at home in front of your home crowd, feed off that energy, and take down the best team in the Sun Belt, the team in the Sun Belt that's been kind of the cream of the crop until the Dukes came into it. It's really, really impressive, and it makes me really excited for this team.
McDaniel's 11th nationally in three-point shooting percentage at 40, like just over 45%, which is so sweet. We're like, the beginning of the year, she wasn't playing much because she was still like coming off the injury kind of. We're like, I don't know about the scoring. Like, I don't know if it's there. I did not realize, and I've said this before, like just how gifted McDaniel is as a scorer. Like, her shot is so good. It's such
so
a
quick.
Yes, it's such a quick release where, and there's no like hesitation. Like sometimes you have like a decent shooter who's like maybe a little, you know, they're not trying to force themselves into the action. No, like McDaniel catches it open from 3 and she's pulling the trigger and like making it almost half the time.
You know who else is doing that? And it's really fun to watch. Not as clean of a shot, not as quick of a shot, but it's whenever they get the ball, they're going to do something with it. Kobe King-Hawea.
Yeah.
Like, she finished the game 4 of 9, 1 of 5 from 3, was not afraid to jack it. A few of those, I wish she probably held in her back pocket and dribbled it out a little bit, but not afraid. Drive into the baseline, weird, like, runner floaters that had no on them, look like beer pong shots, just, like, complete straight in the hoop and just went in, but the mix between her and Peyton McDaniel, really, really fun to watch, even though it might kind of make you want to pull your hair out at times. But combined, they went 13 of 25.
King-Hawea's skip passes are also sweet.
Kobe King-Hawea, her pass is a skip pass. She doesn't believe in, you know, passing along and keeping that ball movement. She goes, oh, I'm in the far right corner. I'm going to throw it to the other far left corner and just hope McDaniel's there. Like, just complete over the head bullet passes.
It was so sweet though, because like their spacing when they had like McDaniel, King-Hawea, and Kiki, like some 2 of 3 or 3 of 3 on the floor, was stupid good. Like, offensively, it's unreal because you've got multiple shooters, but they can also drive. You mentioned King-Hawea has like, I think Coach O actually said this, it might have been on the JMU Sports Blog podcast a while back, that she kind of has like an old man YMCA game where she's not like blowing by you and like elevating toward the rim, but like she has some moves that are just stupid where it's like, oh, she has like the Kobe fadeaway on the baseline. Like, all right, that's cool. Like, there's just a lot of different things that she can do offensively to make the team better. and you surround her with McDaniel and Jefferson, who are like legitimately two of the best players in the Sun Belt, you've got a pretty dynamic offensive group. And then they have a few others who are probably a little bit better defensively. So they have to kind of mix and match the lineups, but it's a good group.
And I think why Kobe King-Hawea saw more minutes in this game than she had in the last few, and Hazel may have seen her minutes kind of get pulled back just a bit, when Troy would deploy the 2-3 zone and Hazel was in there, and this is not a slight against Hazel, I think it's just their different play styles, yeah, they kind of struggled to break it and find ways through. And then when they brought Kobe King-Hawea in, they just kind of broke that press. And I think it was because of the skip passes where King-Hawea would drive, have it collapse, and she's not afraid to just kick it out. I mean, she finished the game with 2 turnovers, no assists. So you don't necessarily love that. You don't also necessarily love how she passes. She likes to jump and then pass, kind of Jeremy Lin during Linsanity-esque. But I think that might be why we saw more Kobe King-Hawea than we saw Jamia Hazel there in that game against Troy.
I'd be willing to bet she had 3 to 5 hockey assists. There were a couple where it was like skip pass, someone else made a pass or something, or like drove and got a good look. There were one or two for sure where she left her feet and it was like, oh, that's probably a turnover now. But there are also a couple where it was like, oh my God, like that's pretty impressive court vision. So it was super fun to watch in person too, because you could like kind of see where she was thinking she was going to go with the skip pass, where maybe you wouldn't have noticed on the broadcast. And it was just like, wow, she's really good offensively. Like I think defensively it's probably not like her strong suit, where like clarinet for someone else can maybe give you a little more there, but offensively the shooting, the ball handling, the passing, it's a pretty hilarious and fun combination when she's got other scorers around her.
And my last point on this, if you're in the Harrisonburg area or if you're planning to go to the Harrisonburg area, the women's basketball games are damn fun. So if you can, I highly urge you to go. Tickets are like $3 and a bag of chips.
So cheap.
So if you can figure it out, I highly recommend getting your way to Harrisonburg and watching this team this year because it's fun.
So fun. They got 3 home games left. I wish it was more. They got a bunch on the road here, but they're worth checking out. For sure. Louisiana, Arkansas State, and Marshall in February. Those are going to be some darn fun games. And they also have a couple in the like Atlanta area if you're an alumni in that region. They've got a road game against ODU. They're so much fun to watch. Like they just play a very fun style that earlier in the year was not fun because they're trying to kind of play fast and do these things. But instead of like completing skip passes, they're turning it over. But now with like a healthy roster, it's so fun to watch.
Yeah. You know who's not as fun to watch?
I'm still high on the men's.
I'm not. I don't know what team you're watching because I don't think we're watching the same one. Men's go 1-1 over the weekend. And over their first overtime win of the season, so maybe luck is changing. They took down Troy 89-87 in overtime. They trailed by 15 at one point, I believe, in the second half. Stormed all the way back to tie it. Headed to overtime. Vado Morse nailed what I thought was a 3, but I guess it was the foot was on the line and they're giving it to him as a 2. It doesn't matter because it was the game winner. Somehow goes in, hits the back iron, just completely just dies and falls in. And to kind of really use that momentum into the next game, they then get blown out by 13 against Southern Miss. And it was never really that close. And now they head into a 2-game homestand against Coastal and Louisiana Monroe. But how important, Bennett, was that win over Troy so they didn't go 0-2 this weekend, which they were staring at dead in the face?
That would have been tough. It's a good one. Troy's a solid Sun Belt team. It's a nice road win. Like they've got some good road wins. Like Marshall and Troy are – our quality road wins.
Yeah, which is hilarious that then they've lost to Texas State and App State at home.
Those suck. And then the other one, too, where it's like, oh, maybe South Alabama's like a solid team. Then after they played JMU, they lost 3 in a row, which maybe it's the 49ers effect where they're so worn down from playing JMU.
Yeah, that's it.
They can't even hang in there. No, but that was a big one to get that win. It was nice to see a close game go their way. And then maybe equally disappointing to have a double-digit loss in the ensuing game. But I think Southern Miss is probably the best team. I think they can compete when fully healthy with like Marshall, I think they might be the best team in the Sun Belt.
Yeah, because Southern Miss has been actually not healthy for like this entire season. And then I forgot who they got back. DeAndre Pickney, was it?
I think he's been around. It was Neftali Alvarez, who's apparently like a freakishly good guard.
Yeah, so they got him back. They're back to being fully healthy, and they're currently 104 in KenPom. Marshall is 75, so every day that Marshall road win is looking better and better, but then some of those other losses are looking worse and worse. And yeah, I agree. I think that win over Troy was massive, so they didn't go 0-2 over this weekend. But at the same time, and I don't want to sound – maybe I have to be, because you're a little too high on this team. Maybe I will be just kind of – the rainy on the parade-y type of person. They shouldn't have won that game. It should have gone to double overtime and they should have lost. Like, that Vado shot had no business going in. And JMU fans got so hype over it. And I get they're one of the unluckiest teams in the nation, so it was bound to change. Their luck was bound to change. But I almost would have rather that been a Valpo, the Valpo game. Like, the shot to win the Valpo game, or a shot to win the Texas State game. Like, I know that sounds weird and it would have been the same record, but they had no business winning that Troy game.
They kind of pulled one out of their butt, right? I mean, they were down 8 with like 3 minutes left and they forced overtime with a Mezzi missed 3 that he rebounded himself. It was a sweet play, but yeah, they definitely got the most out of that one. That's one that I would not have expected their luck to switch in, because it seemed like they could have lost by 10. They didn't. So credit to them. And they've shown a good fight this year. I think the thing that's becoming kind of alarming to me is KenPom will even break it down by like quarters of the game. They're kind of like getting smoked out of the gates in some of these games where like they fight their way back, but the slow starts, especially on the road, you can't just like spot a team that's kind of equal to you 10 points.
And Brian brings this up every game, or there was a point where there was like a 4-game stretch where we were texting our friend Brian and he was just like, these slow starts are killing us.
Yeah, I think it's 4 in a row where they've been down a noteworthy margin, or 3 out of the last 4, something like that, in the first like 10 minutes. And it's, I don't know, you can't spot a team a huge lead. Like against Southern Miss, they just never like cut into it.
Yeah. And this is also a team that I've been told was built to make threes and to shoot threes. And yet they are one of the worst teams. They are the worst team in the Sun Belt in making threes. They make 29.2% of threes in conference play, by far the worst margin in the entire Sun Belt. And not only are they getting blown out to start these games, they have no way to stop the bleeding, because they are one of the worst teams in conference play in stopping the two-point shot. They don't block either. Out of the 14 teams, they are 13th in allowing a 51% shooting percentage from inside the three-point line. They are also, where's effective field goal percentage? 9th out of 14 teams in effective field goal percentage, allowing a 49.4%. That scares me.
It's kind of frustrating a little bit, right? Because they've built a roster that is smaller than most teams.
You can say it. They're tiny.
And they're one of the – I mean, they're right there with, I guess, Troy shooting it horribly from three in conference play too. But they're right there with, like, Texas State, which has been just abysmal offensively all year in conference play shooting. And you look at some of these, like, you don't even have to shoot it that well. Like, Marshall in Louisiana, Marshall's shooting, like, 35% from three in conference play, and they have the best efficiency, according to KenPom, during conference games, because they're not turning the ball over a gazillion – like, Jamie turns it over too much. They're small – the small team's not that great at three-point shooting. And then defensively, their lack of size kills them in the paint. So if they don't force a turnover defensively, they're getting killed, which is the same thing that happened last year. So we said, all right, like, fix that in the offseason. And they did. They just didn't. Like, they added Mezzi, who's a really good player, and Friedel, who's a good player, but was essentially a replacement for Chuck Fald. And I think he's can do more offensively, but he hasn't had his best season. To not get a shot blocker when you know that, like, that is a huge way to improve your two-point defense, to me was a huge miss.
And not only to improve your two-point defense, but to improve your two-point offense. Like, I feel like a big issue too with why their 3-point percentage is so low. It's because teams know this is an analytics driven team. They're going to shoot the three and go inside. And we know they have no one inside, so let's just defend the three, right? And now their only big body that was a consistent player, that was a starter, that was good on offense and defense in Alonzo Sule, he's been out. And according to Byington, you just told this to me, he could play Thursday. He could also miss the rest of the season.
He gave no clear update in a press conference of what his injury situation is. And it's frustrating too, because like you have really good Offram and Amadi have good like efficiency numbers. Some of that is because I think Offram's probably got a more developed offensive game. The other teams in the Sun Belt can literally post a guy, throw him the ball in the post, clear out and let the man work. Maybe Offram can do that, but he kind of slashes well. Amadi's not doing that. Amadi hasn't done that his entire JMU career. It's not his role, which is fine. I just think there's kind of a deeply flawed roster management, which there has been the whole year. And I think they sort of, I'll be honest, they fooled me pretty significantly by playing out of their minds. And some of that in the non-conference when they played out of their minds is they were forcing turnovers at a crazy clip. They're hitting shots at a clip that maybe they're just not actually capable of doing, especially against Sunbelt teams, which are not good, but they are better than like their average non-conference opponent.
I agree wholeheartedly. And people who are saying, well, if you look at the entire sample, they're a good 3-point shooting team. No, they're not. I'm here to say, and correct me if you disagree, but I think the Sun Belt play is a big enough sample to this point. And that sample is telling me they are the 12th best team at shooting the three, hitting it 29.9% of the time. If they're not turning it over, they're not stopping you. And like, it's just a team that is fundamentally flawed that isn't actually a good 3-point shooting team. It's a Division I college basketball team that can hit their shots when you aren't guarding them. That's it.
The positive for me that I will say, I think KenPom has them as like the second toughest in-conference schedule. You look like Marshall, Troy, Southern Miss. Those are probably like three of the four best teams in the league that had to play them all on the road already. They got a stretch here that's extremely winnable.
Yes.
So I think they can finish the year well and put themselves in position that like, hey, let's play our best basketball and compete for the Sun Belt title. I'm just frustrated because I thought they were almost ready. And I think they kind of fooled me thinking they were ready to like be the team in the Sun Belt, especially after the first two conference games, because they do some really nice things defensively. And if they had like a shot blocker, they would probably have the best defense in the conference. They'd probably be they could be a top 50 defense nationally if they had a shot blocker, but they decided not to get a shot blocker. And it is frustrating too, because some of it was like, oh, this is going to fit in the Sun Belt. This is a style that's going to work in the Sun Belt. Like I know the Sun Belt, they're small. And it's like, no, they're getting murdered by big guys game after game.
And fun fact, they have another 6'10", a pretty solid offensive big man they're coming up this weekend against. And just to kind of pile on even more here, their block percentage, which is just a really good indicator of do they have someone that's in the lane, clogging up the lane and getting their hand on shots, by far the last place. 5.2% of all shots are blocked.
And their best guy in terms of block percentage is Sule, who we don't even know when he'll – like he's probably their best post defender, and he might be – I don't know. It's just like it's really confusing the roster build.
Yep.
Because they have so many guards and wings, like almost I would you can argue too many, to be honest with you. Because like,
I would argue too. I think it is a negative, and I know we talked about it after the Georgia State Marshall weekend. Is it a good thing that they're this deep? Is it awesome that they can run 7, 8, 9, 10 guys out there? Is it cool that they can do full platoon swaps? I don't think so anymore. I think it's a detriment to this team. And who was we met Wei at the women's basketball game, and he was kind of talking about it too. Am I going to go out for 5 minutes tonight, or am I going out for 25 minutes tonight? And then you brought like, am I eating a pregame meal where I'm like actually have to try tonight, or like how am I handling this? And I think it's just messing with everyone at this point that there aren't necessarily defined roles outside of three players, and those aren't even like strong roles. It's Friedel, when you get the ball, you can shoot. Votto, have fun with it. And Tikal, never pass.
I don't understand the, well, it's it's kind of sweet that like in KenPom, I guess it goes what, like top 500 nationally if you pop up on one of those statistics. It's pretty sick that they have like seven guards and none of them pop up for assist rate. Like, no, I don't know. Like Iheanacho and Strickland are probably your best distributors and their minutes have just been slashed.
What about the fact that none of the guards have an offense? Is Terrence Edwards listed as a guard or a forward?
He's like a wing hybrid, I guess. I guess you could call him a guard, maybe.
Well, if we're maybe calling him a guard, this is for this point, let's call him a forward. Because no guard ranks in the top 500 in offensive rating either. It's Edwards, Mezzi, and Amadi all rank in the top 500 in offensive rating.
They've been super efficient. And I mean, at least like, I don't know, you've got Friedel and Morse aren't like turnover fiends, but some of the other guys kind of turn it over a lot. It's just, it's a very strange roster build and it doesn't seem to really be working. I don't know. You know
what else is awesome to see? A 3-point lineup made to shoot threes, not have any of their shooters in the top 500 in the nation.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little bit alarming. But like, and the other thing too, that's maybe most frustrating is that the offense has played a little bit better the last few games. I was looking at, I think it's Evan Maya.
And the defense hasn't.
EvanMaya.com, and he has like the efficiency ratings for like offense and defense for each game. And it was like, they had a stretch in there, but the offense was doing nothing. Like those 63-62 losses where they have two of those, offense does anything. They got two wins there. And now it's like the defense getting crushed when the offense is doing things. Southern Miss cooked them. I mean, it was like they couldn't buy a stop. They gave up 65% shooting from two, which is awful. And then Troy had a pretty good offensive game too, where they shot 65% from two again. It's frustrating because it's like, all right, let's turn them over. And then when they don't, it's like, oh my God, I wish we had a 7-footer who could like maybe even consider protecting the rim. Because they have no rim protection.
How awesome would it be if this team had Zach Edey?
They don't even need Zach Edey. Give me like a Sun Belt level center. It's just tough because it's also like it's not the players' fault. Like I think the players are kind of I don't know if they're getting the most out of like what they can be this year, but I think they'll probably go on a little bit of a run here with an easier schedule. It's hard because like they have a roster that if they did have a true center or two, it'd be like, I don't know, Sule, Offerman, and Amadi are not fives. Like they shouldn't have to play the five. They're not fives.
Yeah. And you mentioned it about the schedule. And as I do these three notch previews that we'll dive into here in a minute, you kind of notice how the Sun Belt does the schedules. Some of these teams like start with their easies and then end with the hards, like Louisiana Monroe's 5-3 in Sunbelt play. But the best Sunbelt team they've played is Texas State. And then they're going to like come up against Southern Miss, JMU, Troy. And it's like, oh, it's just like how the schedules
they've
are going.
Lost
and
I think every good team they've played.
Yeah. And I think JMU's kind of in that same boat. So it's a plus that they were able to take down Marshall and Troy. So against like the cream of the Sunbelt crop, they're 2-1 and they're coming up against like the worst part of their schedule. Downside for JMU is that they are 2-3 against bad Sunbelt teams.
Yes, that's not great. We'll see what they can do. I mean, you've got 10 games left. I think if you don't get at least six of those, it'd be really disappointing, which would put you close to 20 wins. You get six, you got 19 wins. So it's not like a
– And six is winning out at home with just – and going 1-4 in away games.
Yeah. Well, I think you could even –
Actually, no.
Go,
six
yeah,
and
4
is – yeah, you could go 0-4. It's winning out at home.
Yeah.
And so, which – come on.
Come on. Go get 20 wins.
I mean, your
wins.
home games are Coastal, Louisiana Monroe, ODU, Louisiana, Marshall, and Georgia State. Two of those sound hard.
Right. And the road games are like very winnable.
ODU, App, Georgia Southern, Coastal. Like all probably, should be wins. All probably. Should be wins.
Right. I mean, it's not crazy to think that like decent showings and you win the next 10.
Not, I would accept
they're not
8-2.
But like, they need to finish strong here. It's also at a point where like, I don't want to hear about the like lineups and how they haven't had guys like, no, this is your lineup. This is your team. It's late January. Let's go.
Yes. Yes.
So let's see something happen, man. And I think they should be able to do it. I hope they do it. they kind of need to do it. Because again, my final point here before we do the little previews is just that, like, they fired Matt Brady because they wanted to make some stuff happen in the postseason and be like a more relevant program. And they're the same program. So I want to see like some sort of reason to believe, some sort of reason to have hope. I want to pull up whatever I tweeted the other day about the, oh yeah. So since Lefty Drysdale left,
someone in those replies said the Lefty era wasn't actually that good either.
Yeah. Which was like, I mean,
I was like, man, we're taking shots at Lefty. Wow. This. All right.
Better than this. I guess it was Lou Campanelli were like the best years, but like better than this. But anyway, since 1997, 98, they have 16 losing seasons, 9 winning seasons, and they've gone to the postseason 4 times. So it's 1 NCAA tournament, no NITs, 2 CITs, and 1 CBI. I mean, what a crappy 2.5 decades that's been. Like, it's at some point you got to do something. Why build the fancy arena if one of your basketball teams just sucks? Women's team, awesome, fun to watch, good job. Men's team, carry weight a little bit, just a little bit.
Because you know what this could be. You saw what it was when JMU beat UVA. And I know it was a down year of UVA. And I know everything around that game. But you saw what that fan base wanted to be. They were chanting, F Tony Bennett.
Dukes do better.
All right. Isn't it pretty cool that we were at the game that incited Dukes do better?
That was pretty cool. History. Yeah. History was made.
I also love watching that Dukes do better, that intro video they play at the beginning of the game now, and Mark Byington sitting there and he's like, we have to be better. Like, come on, Mark, you benefited from the F Tony Bennett chant.
That was a multiple point impact, that crowd.
I'm telling you, and it was, a 5-point win. I'm just saying.
We need some love for that. Come on.
All right. You know, some product placement here. It's time for the three-notched weekly preview. This weekend, men's basketball, a nice little homestand against 10-10 Coastal Carolina, and then Louisiana Monroe, who sits at 9-12 on the season, come into the AUBC. Coastal 256 in KenPom, and they are defensively atrocious. It's the third worst team JMU has played defensively this season, behind, I believe, Howard or Hampton and LIU. They're coming off of a loss against Chicago State. They're just not very good, and this should be an easy win for JMU. I will say, JMU fans, don't get too excited if JMU shoots lights out from three. That doesn't mean the problems are fixed. It means they're going up against a terrible defense, one that is very similar to LIU. In a game that I think will actually be pretty solid will be the Louisiana Monroe game. They're sitting at 5-3 in conference. They were picked as the last place team in the preseason poll, and they're currently sitting in third. They're 9-9 against the spread. But like you said, they're not good against good teams. And there's a reason they're 296th in the net. They've beaten every bad team they've played, and their only good win this season is against Texas State. They do have a 6'10 senior forward in Victor Bafuto, who may present some problems for JMU. But overall, these are two very winnable games that if JMU doesn't go 2-0, not good. What are your thoughts?
You got to win these two. Coastal hosted Chicago State. Chicago State doesn't even play in a conference, I found out yesterday. They're an independent basketball team.
Are they in Chicago?
I believe they are, in fact, in Chicago. Yes.
Okay. I just know some of those, like Jacksonville State isn't in. They're real. It's in Alabama.
They're a real team in Chicago. 4-0 this year at home. 1-16 on the road. Coastal was their first road win of the season.
Wait,
they stink.
They've only played 4 home games this season?
Because they're an independent somehow. I don't understand. But they're basically a fake program as far as I'm concerned. One of their wins, though, pretty embarrassing here. Chicago State has a home win over Valpo. So that's tough. But they are not good. Coastal just lost to them. Coastal's not good. Like, they can't shoot the three. They can't defend the three. They can't defend anything.
They're 321st in defensive efficiency. They can't defend. I could shoot. I could score points against them.
Louisiana Monroe, they can't shoot the two. You don't even need a shot blocker. They can't do it on their own. They're terrible. Both these teams, not good. If you want to, you want to win the Sun Belt, you want to be slightly relevant in mid-major basketball if you're JMU, just win the next two games. No excuses about lineups, no excuses about anything. I don't care if like half the team has a flu. Win the next two games. They're at home. Win the next two games.
I dig it. I agree. I think if you lose either one of these two, I think someone's seat should get a little hot.
You love putting people in the hot seat.
Look, I was right. I've been right on both of my seats.
That's not right.
Yes. Who are your my seats have been Eichenberry, who, yes.
That one, yeah.
And Coach O. You Coach can't O look. Not. No, you can't look at me in the face and say that. No. Just was, because he's performing well this year doesn't mean that his seat shouldn't have been hot the last three.
No, his seat wasn't scorching. If anything, there was a slight warmth that you added to it. But they're rolling right now.
I also put Coach Rowe on the hot seat, didn't I?
That was an easy one.
Yeah, it was. But I'm just saying, ball. I'm 3 for 3.
That's debatable. But I'll take that for you. Yeah, 3 correct hot seats.
It was no Connor Mitchell be the starter, but man, it's pretty good.
I think if anything, it lights a fire under the coaches, right? People are listening to the pod. Look at what the women's team has done since you put them on the hot seat for the fifth time.
I will say it was a little awkward with Coach O being so close in the AUBC. I'm not sure if he knows who we are.
That dude that is yoked, by the way. Like, more not even realized. Like, his back is popping out of his polos. My God.
Someone should tell him, though, to unbutton that top button because that style went out, like, 5 years ago.
I think he should unbutton all of them and just lean into, like, ripped Coach. He should be doing also, curls, like, pregame.
Shout out Neil Harrow, the former Troy assistant who we poached from Troy to bring to JMU. Big time win for him, but also shout out that man bun. I don't always love man buns, but it's something about his Scottish ancestry and the way that thing's just up there, nice and tight, really well lined up. 10 out of 10 man bun.
He was putting on a show, too. He knew, like, every play Troy was about to run. It was awesome.
There was one point where, like, JMU turned it over, like, 2 or 3 times. And I don't know if you caught this, but he went on the bench and he sat down. He looked at all the girls and he was just like, they're just going to try and turn you over. Just don't. Like, that's all they have.
They're awesome. What a hire by Coach O. Man, it's coldest seat in the biz.
All right, JMU football, talking about coldest seats in the biz. Kurt Cignetti, you know, he signed that contract extension that for every 7-win season, it just adds a phantom year to a contract. Never have I ever seen that in a contract before, but here we are, and I think that could say that he has the coldest seat in the house. But it's official JMU transfers. They've all signed. The transfer window opens back up a little bit later. In that other transfer window, I would not be surprised if we see Atkins or Barnett hit the portal or both. But they've signed them all. And now we're in the quarterback competition time as McLeod assumed to be the front runner, followed by Griffiths. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
I think so.
Barnett and Atkins are all battling for the 2 through 4 spot. Who do you think wins the competition here on January 24th as we're recording?
McLeod's got to be the front runner, right? Because he has experience playing college football and was, like, good at USF and like, showed flashes at Arizona.
Yeah, and the fact that the other 3 quarterbacks combined have more interceptions than completions.
Yeah, they've, like, barely played at all. So it's a tough one to think that it'll be that competitive. Although I think it'll be interesting if it actually, like, I've always wanted, as just, like, a fan, like, a freshman to just blow the doors off the competition and be like the guy for 4 years would be crazy cool. This is very hard to like simulate multiple years in a strength program and like learning offenses and just adjusting to college life. So my guess is that McLeod kind of runs away with it pretty early. And then you have a battle for, I would assume kind of in the spring, the battle becomes more of a backup battle. And then however that plays out, I would think the loser of like that 3-man race could transfer. That would just be my guess if they want playing time, unless you just want to like be around a really good program and be a 4th string, which like from my perspective of not liking contact sounds sweet. Like you just,
I've always
on the football
held the
team,
belief.
You want to parties and stuff. You're like, you guys are rolling through the Sun Belt. You don't have to do anything on the field. It'd be awesome.
I've always held the belief that the best job in professional football is the backup quarterback.
Yeah, can you imagine, like, third string college kid who's just like, you two injuries aren't happening in front of me. I'm fine. That's a sweet gig.
Not to mention the fourth string. Three injuries aren't happening in front of me.
No, you're good. You're good. Yeah. I think that's the real competition. I would be gunning for that fourth string job. Be throwing practice picks like you wouldn't even believe.
All right.
But I thought the press conference was somewhat interesting because he said that. And then he talked about maybe still wanting to add wide receivers through the portal in the spring. They've added a lot of wide receivers, so revamping that room.
After who graduated, who left?
Chris Thornton. Devin Ravenel. Your two main guys, I believe, that have left.
Reggie Brown back.
Reggie Brown, I believe, is expected back. So they should have a pretty good group. Defensively, I think they're going to be awesome. I'm excited. I think it'll be a good year.
New Year's Six?
They could make a run for it. I saw some people, I don't know if they're a Jamie fan, saying that, like, got to get through the UVA game. I think UVA is going to be a dumpster fire. So I'm not, like, respectfully, I'm not worried about that game at all. Like, the more and more I watch them go through their offseason, took them like a month to hire a new offensive line coach. That's not good. Their wide receivers coach, who is beloved in Charlottesville, played at UVA, played quarterback and wide receiver, Marcus Hagans, just left for the same position at Penn State.
I saw that, and I saw some UVA fans saying, I wish you would have been the head coach.
Not a good sign. Not a good sign to lose him. Your offensive line coach who hung around and then decided to leave for an in-conference foe. Like, just not good. They're having this coaching staff revamp. You lost your starting quarterback in Brennan Armstrong. You had a Monmouth transfer come in who, like, might be the favorite to win the job. Respectfully to Monmouth and the Jet who used to play there. I'm sure he'll be tuning in for that one. I don't know. I think they might be, like, 3-9 bad. Or, like, two, like, they may be horrible.
Who's their head coach? Tony Elliott?
Tony Elliott, yeah.
Does he keep his job after next year?
Super good dude that I think is well-respected from that perspective. I don't know that Carlo Williams would be, like, really intensely trying to get a new coach. But if they go, like, not bowl game again, which I think is highly realistic, I think the seat becomes quite hot.
See, I only put JMU coaches on the hot seat. Here you are putting UVA coaches on the hot seat.
It's fans are like, and the UVA fans typically are like, you know, not that intensely focused on the football team. And they're still like, what is going on? The Hagans ones are really a really tough blow because he's just like awesome. Super engaging too from a recruiting perspective. To lose him is not great.
Yikes. Well,
yeah.
Anything else you got to add?
I think we're winning out next year in football.
All right.
Basketball better go on a run. Men's basketball right now. Putting you on watch. Putting you on notice. Let's do something here. Let's fire up the I don't know what you're firing up, but let's get some stuff going here, you know?
Yep. This weekend, women's basketball will take on Coastal Carolina and Georgia State, both on the road. And the men's team takes on Coastal and Louisiana Monroe, both at home. Should be a good weekend. Fingers crossed JMU goes 4-0 in those. Men's basketball really have to pick up two wins as they're facing off against two of the worst teams in the Sun Belt, according to analytics. We'll be back next week with another edition of the JMU Sports News Podcast presented by Bet Online. See ya.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.